something I want. I'll grow my own. Yeah, all I need is G-O-D to bless the seeds I've sown and pray for a little rain. Yeah, my daddy was the same. He showed me as a kid how to live and let live. And if you think you know what's good for me, you don't. I'll grow my own home.
Continuing our conversation, Gary D always has the magic touch of finding a song to tie into the topic at hand. And we are talking not necessarily about growing our own today, but about preserving what we've grown or what we've picked up from a farmer's market. There is nothing like, you alluded to it earlier, and you've got all those nice peaches in there. Nothing but just half peaches right out of the can, nice and cold. On a summer's day, out on the lawn under the shade tree, just sit there with a fork and eat those peaches and let them drip nice. Down your chin.
Well, and I'll tell you what, there is once you grow your own peach or apricot or plum, you will never be able to buy one in the store again. They're just that good.
Well, and peaches are so hard to get fresh in the store because they're ripening season. You know, they're not like citrus or melons that you can pick and it'll preserve itself for a while. I mean, peaches spoil fast, so they've got to pick them before they're ripe so they don't go bad by the time the supply chain gets to you. And when you learn you can just pick them off your own tree at your leisure.
I can't buy a store-bought peach anymore. I just can't do it. Or apricots. Last time I bought apricots at the grocery store, they were organic, but it was like, why bother? So what do you do with all of this? You mentioned juicing. I actually, a few years ago, bought an apple cider crusher and press. It was about $1,000 for the equipment. And what you do is you put the apples in the top and you run them through. It's a hand crank thing again. You run them through and it crushes them. It masticates them all into this pulp. And then you stick them in the juicer and you just press the juice out of them. It works so incredibly well. And I've actually had some people make some apple wine out of my apples, and apple cider. So
you've done this.
I have done this. And one of the things, you know, I love cool tools, and we bought the mesquite bean mill a couple of years ago. That was a $12,000 investment to mill mesquite beans into flour. And we have the apple crusher and apple press. The other thing I want to buy, you know, those big machines you see in the grocery stores where you pour a case or two of oranges in the top and it cuts them in half and juices them. We need one of those here in Phoenix because of the abundance, the amazing abundance of citrus that shows up in the winter.
There's a breakfast place in Scottsdale that has that machine. I'll sit there at the bar and just watch them do it. It's cool.
Yeah.
It's cool. They're watching those oranges go in and squeeze them.
I had not seen that. And I feel a lot better now because one thing that I can tend to spend a lot of money on are kitchen gadgets for preserving. I've got the food salad wheel. I've got the grain mill. I've got that press that we traded one time for the dehydrator that is an apple slicer, but it's also an orange juice press.
Yep.
Or you can make French fries with it. I feel a lot better because these are all $100 to $300 products. Greg's kitchen gadgets are $12,000.
Right. When we check out growphx.org for our mesquite milling, we'll be doing a mesquite milling for the public. So you'll be able to pick your own mesquite beans and bring them down and mill them into flour and take your flour home. So.
And that is usually into June, into
It's the
July?
last Friday and Saturday of June this year.
Okay.
We've decided we're moving forward with it. It'll be outside and social distance and all that good stuff.
Excellent. Yeah, mesquite trees and beans. There's no shortage of them.
That is the case.
Nobody had to plant them.
Right.
Nobody had to graft them. They're just there.
Just there. Yeah,
so
exactly.
Once again, you can make bread, cupcakes, pancakes. What can you do with it?
Anything
you do
with white flour.
Everything like that? Okay.
Well, there's no gluten in it, so it doesn't rise. So it's more like curry. What kind of flour? What's mesquite flour like?
It is a kind of a nutty tasting flour. It's got a lot of fiber in it. It's more like a, sometimes people who are on low carb diets, they'll use almond flours or coconut flours. It's more like that. And for me, I always mix it with a different flour with a white or a whole wheat flour for cooking, just because I don't want it to be 100% mesquite, but some people just use the mesquite and make some really tasty treats.
Oh, yeah. Well, and there's cookbooks out there for, there's Eat Mesquite and More. That's the Desert Harvesters down in Tucson. They put out that book, and it's got to be 200 pages. So there's so much you can do with it. And preserving mesquite flour is super easy. You mill it, and you put it in a jar.
it doesn't get much more complicated than that.
It doesn't get much more complicated than that. And it lasts for years. It lasts for years, so.
Well, I'm going to put us back onto your talking points, because the next one is one of my favorite, pickling and fermenting. And last week we had a special guest on the show, Suzette Smith,
the garden goddess.
Who, Suzette. Oh, yeah. She's the first fermenter, yeah. Fermenting company in Arizona.
Yeah.
And she sent us a few samples. And
ooh.
The older I've gotten, the more I've developed a taste for sauerkraut.
Isn't that amazing?
And she has this sauerkraut. There's a few different lines, but it's called cowboy kraut.
Uh-huh.
And I had it every day for lunch this week.
Nice.
It is the best sauerkraut I've ever had.
Yeah. Well, sauerkraut and making sourdough bread, it's the same fermenting process. And I have to admit, I know zero to nothing. That's an oxymoron. I know that. I know zero to nothing about fermenting and sourdough bread, but I know that Kari does.
Yeah, I do. I love fermenting. Stuff just tastes so good, and it's so good for you because it has all those probiotics in it. I mean, you can pickle just with a water bath canner. You can make water bath can pickles, but they're not fermented. They taste great, but if you really want that, the health benefits, you got to ferment them. And it really is easy to do. Just like canning, you want to follow the directions in your recipe very, very carefully. You want to make sure you're starting with sterile containers. And basically what you do is you cut up whatever you're fermenting and you put it in those sterile containers with a piece of cheesecloth or some sort of porous material over the top. And I just put a rubber band around it. You don't want the top to be sealed because you want the lactobacillus that ferments it to be able to get to it. So you don't want to seal it. It also produces gas as it ferments. So if you put a tight lid on it, it could explode. So you want to just make sure that you just have a piece of cloth over the top and you put it in a cool, dark place for a period of time, and it ferments, makes your pickles, makes your relish, and so tasty, so good for you.
So what's the difference between fermented and pickled?
Well, pickled can be fermented, or pickled can be just processed in a water bath canner with vinegar. The water bath canner method in the vinegar is not fermenting. It does not have the probiotics. When you pickle, it takes a lot longer because you have to let it sit and attract the lactobacillus that starts to break down the food inside the container. And that's what releases all that probiotic goodness and releases that vinegar taste that we associate with pickled items. So it's a completely different process. Both ways are delicious.
Right?
And that offsetting gas, when you see, you know, there's attachments you can do just onto your canning jars that have a lid on top that allows for that gas to escape for your fermenting. So your canning supplies can be part of your fermenting supplies. Now, that's a smaller one-size jar. I mean, you can go up to 5-gallon fermenters that you can make a huge batch of before you preserve.
Man, you know more right. about this than I do. Maybe you should be doing this segment. Oh, you are.
Yeah, we pickle in very large jars. We pickle watermelon rinds, and they're so delicious.
The rind. Interesting.
Yeah.
Green and all. The green part and all.
Green, the green part. Yep.
Yeah, I'm there too. It's like, ooh, that sounds interesting. I'd like to try that.
What would you put that on, though? Is it just something to snack with? Or
it tastes like a relish, or you can just eat it. It's
eat
so
it.
Yummy.
Oh,
well,
okay.
I've got something to do with the watermelon rind other than just throwing it in the chicken coop now.
Right? Although the chickens do love it.
They do. They'll pick it clean. Interesting. So what other kinds of things are you fermenting? You know, sauerkraut's the obvious one. And now apparently watermelon rinds are obvious to some people too. What else do you ferment, Kari?
Everything. I mean, you can ferment... You can ferment eggs if you want to. You can ferment citrus rinds. You can. I like to ferment radishes. We make a radish relish that is so delicious.
Gary's over here
yeah,
shaking.
I mean, it's a great way to use up things that you wouldn't normally eat, like the watermelon rinds. So, I mean, just be creative. You can ferment just about anything.
Get creative. Gary's over here shaking his head madly about all the things you're fermenting.
There's a radish called a watermelon radish that I had a few months ago with a little bit of hummus on the top.
Ooh.
Oh, man, is that good.
You know, this is why I love doing this, because I get to learn new stuff all the time.
And there's an endless amount of stuff to learn.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
All right, one final segment with Farmer Greg of the Urban Farm and Kari Spencer of the Microfarm Project here at Rosie on the House. We're going to wrap up, and we've got to cram dehydrating and freezing into one segment.